Hi, everybody, and thank you for joining us for the Preceptor Podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Ryan, and today we have with us one of our Appy students this year, Dakota Smith. Dakota, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, so my name is Dakota Smith. I'm a fourth-year student here at Manchester University. I'm currently on a drug information Appy, and I'll be starting a residency here after graduation at Norton Hospitals in Louisville, Kentucky. Thanks for having me on.
Congratulations on your residency. That's really exciting. Are you doing a specialty residency at all, or is it just pretty general?
I'm doing the PGY-1 with the goal of doing a PGY-2 in infectious disease, hopefully after.
Good deal. Okay, well, this has nothing to do with infectious disease, but we asked Dakota here to talk to us a little bit today about an article that came out recently that is, it's going to be a lot of different types of trials, but it's a meta-analysis and looking at a sequential analysis for oral hypertensives in pregnancy. So we're starting to get a pregnancy theme right now. It's looking like in a lot of the literature that's coming out. So just to kind of start us out here, can you give us an overview of this article?
Yeah, of course. So like was said, this article is looking at different oral antihypertensives, specifically in non-severe pregnancy hypertension. There's some debate on which medication should be given first line in this population. There's multiple organizations, including ACOG, which recommends either labetalol, methyldopa, or extended release nifedipine as the first line agent, but there's no clear which one you should pick. You should pick one over the other. So this article kind of tries to give some guidance on that and evaluate the use of those medications. And they use a meta-analysis as well as a network meta-analysis design, which I'll talk a little bit about the network meta-analysis. That's relatively a pretty new form of study design where they complete a normal meta-analysis where they essentially take all the evidence for specific comparisons for drug A as compared to drug B, as you would expect, and then they combine the multiform meta-analysis. And that is known as the direct evidence. Whereas then for a network meta-analysis, it allows you to take advantage of indirect evidence. And kind of an easy way to look at this is kind of take it back to high school geometry and the transitive property, where it was if A is equal to B and B is equal to C, then A must be equal to C. And so it's kind of that idea where A and C were never actually compared to each other, but they were both compared to B. So you can kind of make that indirect evidence is what it's called in order to make some association. Pretty complex way of doing a study, but that's kind of an easy way to look at it. While also it allows you to be able to compare multiple different drugs at the same time. So for this study, they are looking at labetalol, methyldopa, calcium channel blockers, other beta blockers, multi-drug regimens. And then they, through this, just with like other meta-analysis, they completed a thorough literature search where they included any unpublished data that they found, as well as reviewing the references of their related trials to make sure that they have all the trials and evidence that they need. And then they only included randomized clinical trials that were related to the treatment of non-severe pregnancy hypertension, which that was defined as having a systolic blood pressure of 140 to 159 and a diastolic of 90 to 109. And then as they went through these studies, they excluded any study that where more than 50% of the patients had severe hypertension, which would be greater than the 160 or greater or greater than 110. Unless they did include them, if they reported separately the non-severe patients, then they would include it. They also excluded ones that if they aimed to reduce the preeclampsia risk or if they had any kind of unresolved data integrity concerns. And then the specific outcomes that they were trying to look at were episodes of severe hypertension, proteinuria, fetal death, small for gestational age, preterm birth, and then as well as admission to neonatal. So then some of the results, and after they do their literature search, they come up with about over 1,000 publications, which they ended up reducing down to 72 trials that they included, with most of these studies being pretty old before the year 2000, with most of the patients in the second or third trimester. And as reviewing it, there didn't appear to be any evidence of any kind of publication bias. And, you know, heterogeneity is an important thing to consider with meta-analysis. And there didn't appear to be any substantial heterogeneity with most of the I-squared values being around 0.4 or less than 0.4. And then importantly as well, with a network meta-analysis, they also look at consistency, which is pretty much, it's pretty comparable to heterogeneity. But overall, they didn't really see any major consistency issues between the trials, except for trials that compared methadopa or calcium channel blockers to placebo, and trials that compared methadopa to calcium channel blockers. There seemed to be a little bit of inconsistency, which they measure with p-values, the standard less than 0.05 being trials may be inconsistent. And so for the results, all the treatments were statistically significant when it came to reducing severe hypertension episodes against placebo. Labetalol had the lowest odds ratio, with an odds ratio of 0.31 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.18 to 0.51. So pretty significant there. As well as then multi-drug treatment had an odds ratio of 0.32 with a range of 0.11 to 0.81. However, that result is only related to the meta-analysis itself as the network meta-analysis. There was no indirect evidence that was applied to that comparison. So then additionally, looking at some of those other outcomes, labetalol was also statistically significant at reducing the rate of proteinuria with an odds ratio of 0.73. The confidence interval there was 0.54 to 0.99, so pretty close to that 1.0 line. As well as labetalol was significant for perinatal death as well, with an odds ratio of 0.54, again, ranging from 0.3 to 0.98, so pretty close to that 1.0 line as well. And then when comparing these drugs to placebo, there are no other outcomes other than the ones stated that were found that were any kind of difference found. And then when they went and looked back at the other comparisons where they compared drug to drug, they did find that labetalol was superior to methadopa at reducing severe hypertension. Odds ratio was 0.51, range 0.27 to 0.95. And then they also found that labetalol was superior to methadopa and calcium channel blockers for proteinuria as well. And then any other comparison that they made between drugs did not find any kind of statistically significant. And then the last thing that they additionally did during this study was what they called a trial sequential analysis, which essentially this was just a way for them to determine if there was enough evidence included in their meta-analysis, as well as provide sample size numbers for future studies that would be needed. For a trial with 90% power and trying to find a relative risk reduction of 20% when comparing labetalol to methadopa, they would require treatment arms of 5,000 subjects when looking at severe hypertension, which I felt like these numbers were pretty prohibitive for any kind of trial in the future to really find for that to really occur in this population. But then overall, I mean, when looking at this trial, they did have a really robust literature search, and I felt confident that they likely included all the relevant trials within their study as for the network and meta-analysis and the meta-analysis in order to provide as much data as possible. And with all this in mind, it appears that labetalol may have some advantages over methadopa and calcium channel blockers, which the study, of course, believes may need some further evaluation due to those the trial sequential analysis. But like I said, I feel like I find it hard to believe that that's going to happen considering those large sample sizes.
That is quite a study that we've pulled here for you, Dakota. Thank you so much for breaking that down and bringing us back to geometry as well, because I appreciated that. It made a lot of sense, honestly, so I really appreciated it. So it's really interesting to me. There have got to be limitations to this study, though. So what limitations do you see?
Yeah, so there are a few limitations with it. One thing with a meta-analysis, you're including all of these trials, and it's best for them to be as similar as possible, which is why we talk about the heterogeneity. And when you look through these trials, you should be trying to determine risks of bias. That usually there's some specific way that the authors determine this. But then in this study, they were unable to determine like the bias risk for about 80% of the studies. It tended to be due to kind of their subjective nature of their methods for determining it, rather than they didn't use a standardized tool such as like a jaded score or criteria. So it kind of makes it hard to evaluate the individual studies as a reader without having to go and review all these studies itself. So it's kind of difficult. It could be hard to trust the results as much. They also mentioned that they felt like they underestimated the inconsistency that I talked about with the network meta-analysis. So in some of these values where they use p-values to measure that inconsistency, where if p is less than 0.05, there's inconsistencies present. And so some of those results where those p-values may be close to 0.05, you may kind of question it, take it with a grain of salt, those results, and think about it. But it is important to mention that the results with labetalol and its consistency, those p-values were near 1.0. So it may not really affect those results in a significant way, where that p-value being 1.0 is saying that the results are very consistent between those trials. And then they also, you know, they only included randomized trials, which is what you would expect with a meta-analysis. And, you know, but considering the population of pregnant women, it can be pretty difficult to perform large randomized trials in this population. And so I think the inclusion of like cohort studies would have likely provided a lot more evidence in a population where a cohort study makes, where a cohort study makes a lot of sense. And that would have provided a lot more evidence and maybe reduced those numbers for that trial sequential analysis. And then just as some other limitations, you know, I mentioned the studies in the trial were pretty old. That could make it kind of difficult to maybe collect all of the data or for each outcome, which kind of aligns as well with out of the outcomes that they looked at, no specific outcome was reported in more than half of the trials, which may have limited the amount of evidence, you know, that was portrayed for each outcome despite having those 72 studies. And then the last thing, which I think is kind of important, where I mentioned, you know, labetalol, methyldopa, and nifedipine tend to be the three, you know, recommended drugs. And they separate labetalol from beta blockers, but they didn't separate nifedipine from calcium channel blockers, which is that's something I would have liked to see them have done. So it makes it kind of hard to think about nifedipine with these results because it's also, it's being grouped together with all calcium channel blockers. So that's something I wish they would have done as well.
That's really interesting. I mean, when you talk about 72 studies, you're like, oh, that's a lot of studies. But then when you do break it down and you think about, we're looking at three different drugs and some other stuff and everything, then like that really does help kind of sober that a little bit, right? So mm-hmm. This kind of gets us to our $1 million question here is based on, you know, this study and things, are you expecting to see any changes in practice for the treatment of hypertension? And this is again, non-severe hypertension, but the treatment of non-severe hypertension in pregnancy.
Yeah, I don't think any like major changes would happen going forward. I mean, it may potentially increase the use of labetalol over methyldopa and nifedipine, but kind of like we talked about, it's not really, you know, hard set evidence that's displayed here, but there's definitely some trends and potential with labetalol having some additional factors with reducing proteinuria and potential reduction in perinatal death. Where it's something that I think if it was me specifically and somebody asked me, what should I give someone with pregnancy, non-severe hypertension? I would probably say either labetalol, methyldopa, or extended release nifedipine, but with a preference for labetalol, considering those potential benefits, as well as when you look around at these studies and different resources, it tends to say that labetalol tends to have fewer side effects in this population as well compared to the others. So overall, I don't think any major changes, but potentially more use of labetalol.
So I'd like to ask kind of an off the cuff question here. So you went into the network kind of study, the network analysis, which I think is really interesting, and the transitive property makes sense for me. But it's the first time I've really heard of it in a scientific study like this. Do you see this as something that is going to be utilized more frequently for those studies or that information where it's going to be pretty prohibitive to get the enrollment groups needed to really determine a difference in a cohort?
Yeah, I definitely think so, especially, you know, considering that advantage of it, that it allows you to use that indirect evidence and compare drugs, even though they didn't get directly compared to, and especially in settings like pregnancy where studies may be prohibitive and not being able to do them. I definitely think it's something that's going to be more common. And even outside of that, I think it's something that becomes more common because I think a lot of people will see it as a way to strengthen their results by providing just more evidence.
Well, I think, if people want to look at this study a little bit more, then we can definitely put the link to it in the show notes. But anything else that our listeners should know?
Not specifically, but if there's other, you know, other places that you can find resources for these topics, include, you know, the AHA and Canadian hypertension guidelines have statements about pregnancy hypertension, as well as the European Society of Cardiology has a position paper related to this topic. And I mentioned ACOG earlier, which is the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, which I would consider the number one resource in this patient population in here. But unfortunately, like their practice bulletins and like their guidelines, they're not available without a subscription, which could make it kind of difficult. So that's why you may go to some of those other resources as well. But they all make very similar recommendations with that labetalol, methadopa, or the extended release nifedipine.
Well, this has been really informative, Dakota. Thanks so much for taking some time to walk us through this study.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you all for joining us for this episode of the Pharmacy Preceptor Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please like or subscribe. We would love your feedback on topics that interest you and how we can make this podcast better. Please submit your comments to help us develop content that best serves you. Thanks, everyone.